Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Okay, good morning. My name is Roger Whiteman. I'm with Coulter Solutions. I'm the president and founder.
Roger, thanks so much for making time joining us on the Ivy Podcast on this Tuesday morning. Before we get into your current company, what are you building for, which I'm very excited about to learn a little bit more, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Okay, and thanks for having me, John. It's great to be here. I've been in the IT staffing business for about 25 years at this point. I started, with some of the larger, well-known staffing firms out there, worked for firms that were once small and got large, and finally had the opportunity in May of 2010 to start my own. So that's been 11 years now that Coulter's been going, and that has really been my whole career.
Wow. Yeah, that's very exciting, and congrats on all the success with your company. When it comes to kind of the motivation to build something where you're currently growing in terms of the IT staffing side, what was the motivation behind that? How did you overall just decide to do that?
Mine's kind of an unusual story in that way. A lot of people dream and have fantasies about starting their own practice in whatever business you're in sometimes. But in my case, I never really had the finances or resources or never really thought I could. And through a twist of fate, I guess, it wasn't until, if you remember in 2008, 2009, the country was going through a major recession. That set me back in my career with where I was at that time. And I basically started over. So this was the business I knew. I started the company literally out of my living room at the time, and it was just me for the longest time. And I thought I could go back to some of the clients I had worked with over the years, people that I knew, make a few placements while I eventually would find a real job. But then it really kind of started getting some traction. And it was really more of a sole proprietorship for the first couple of years. I tried to bring on some help, which were really friends of mine, acquaintances I had known in the industry, but I didn't have much to offer. It was still very much a fledgling business. As a couple more years rolled by, it really took off. Of its own volition, it's very organic. Getting a partner in here to help me, getting some senior leadership in here to help me really made the difference. I realized that you get to a point where you just max out if it's just you. There's only so much you can do in terms of being the salesperson, being the recruiter, doing the payroll, doing the invoicing. Your day is full. You got nothing left. So you have to get help, and you have to get really good help. And I was very lucky to do that. So that's really kind of how this thing took off. It was not an overnight success.
Yeah, well, it's an overnight success that took 10 years, right? So I always love stories like that because I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, talk to a lot of executives, and it always seems like something happens overnight, but
it never does. That's right.
All of the great effort that actually took that off the ground. So I think that's a very unique story how you kind of fell into that and actually grew that into a very successful business, which is amazing. So you've been in the industry for quite some time, technology and the staffing, talent acquisition. You've seen the different cycles, you've seen the different trends and what just the industry has been going through. The past couple of years have been, no exception in terms of the kind of the volatility and the things that we had all seen. Tell me a little bit about some of the trends that you're very excited about personally from your industry perspective. What are you researching? What is kind of on the Rogers radar in terms of the next big thing?
Yeah, well, I think what we're going through now is the biggest fundamental shift I've seen in my career, maybe in my lifetime, really. Having, I've been through several recessions before, and I knew what that was like. When you have to really scratch and claw every single job order, it can be grueling. But this time, it's very different because we're all dealing with, we're still dealing with the pandemic. but now, and hopefully the aftermath of the pandemic, and how that has shifted business, particularly to, I'll start with territory. You know, we're based in Orlando, Florida. Most of our business is here, has been here, somewhat throughout the state. But now it's, you know, we operate in 12 or 13 other states because there is no territory now. You know, in the remote environment that we seem to be in, and I think we're going to stay here, at least in some hybrid fashion. We can talk about that. But, you know, now you have companies in California, Texas, that are pulling talent out of Central Florida and vice versa. So there's no reason our sales folks can't call really anywhere in the country at this point.
Yeah, that, absolutely. That's very interesting, especially, you know, when it comes to talent acquisition. During the pandemic, a lot of companies and, you know, the startups or any of the size, I guess the perception was, okay, I can now hire, you know, virtually on a global scale. It's going to expose me to a great pool of talents. But at the same time, competition 10x'd because the companies with much greater benefits and, you know, the environments were going after the, you know, the same talent as well. So that's a very interesting dynamic in terms of, as you partner with your client companies to find very niche, very, you know, in demand, hard to find skill set, especially in technology. Tell us a little bit more about some of the strategies that really help you kind of outperform the competition or really find those very unique blend of skills from the technical paired with, you know, the soft skills. How do you go about that? Tell us a little bit more about those strategies.
Well, I think despite the greatness of the new robust technology that is always, you know, something new is always coming out that helps us to connect better, faster, more quickly. We all know very few people answer their phones anymore. When I started, that was how you connected with somebody. And it was email. Now it's, you know, it might be text messaging or, you know, there's a bunch of new platforms out there for that. But that is still a tool. I firmly believe that this is still a very much a relationship-based business. And it always will be. There's a human element in the thing. And that's what we continue to focus on. So that's really the challenge. If we're working with a client in, say, Chicago or somewhere, how do you build a relationship when you can't meet people in person? You can't walk the halls of the office like you used to be able to. You've got to find ways to do that. And when we bring in new people to this business, and that's really how we've been growing lately, is people that don't have experience. Because we can show them this business from the very beginning, according to the best practices that we feel are out there. But that's the trick to the whole thing. You still have to get them on the phone. You have to get their attention, but then get them on the phone, build some rapport, understand that you're there as your career advocate. There are a lot of companies out there, agencies that are very transactional. They're just looking to place you, make their money, and then they move on. You don't hear from them again. We're trying to do the total opposite of that. Once we place you in an assignment, that's only the very beginning. We have very specific metrics in terms of touch points that are weekly, even daily if necessary. We go out of our way to offer, I think, industry-leading benefits, medical, you know, dental, 401k. We offer pet insurance, which is sort of funny, but people love that. And we're always adding additional perks because I think really your best sales force are your billable consultants in the field. They're there. They're talking to their peers all the time. They can refer people and they do. They can tell their managers or whoever they work for how great or how poor you are. And that is your biggest resource these days. Your biggest sales force, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting that. So that's our emphasis is not only the people we place and building that continuing relationship, even if we don't place you, we want to keep in touch with you. We're making sure we're calling you at least once a month. Hey, what's going on? Even if there's nothing in particular happening at that moment, maybe they're happy where they are. Let's keep talking because you never know when life changes. And I want to be your first phone call when and if something happens. So that's been our mantra all along. And I think it's served us well. And I think it's a difference maker. We continue to have consultants that say, hey, this is fantastic. Other firms haven't. I've worked for many other firms. No one else is doing this. So I think that's a difference maker for us.
Yeah, I love the simplicity of that, and oftentimes how overlooked that component is in terms of having that unfair advantage from the relationship-driven approach and really building meaningful relationships, whether with your consultants or with the, you know, the client companies. I think it's we've seen that work, and it's unfortunately a lot of times not as widely adopted. So that's, you know, that's very, you know, thanks for sharing some of that insight.
You're right. It's really about the consistency with that too, because this, yeah, in this business, it's notoriously, fortunately, kind of high turnover.
Yeah.
There aren't many people that stay in staffing for many, many years and make it their career. It's something you have to kind of learn to love, or you just don't like it.
Yeah.
So, building an environment internally for your sales, recruiters, your back office people, everyone, where they actually enjoy it, they want to stay. And then you have an opportunity to build those relationships that we're talking about, because you haven't moved on to another company. Hello, I'm your new rep calling now, and who are you? And you're starting all over every time. So keeping the team, keeping the band together, so to speak, is so important to the whole thing.
Right. No, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you on that. So as you partner with both sides, with the candidates and the consultants and the hiring managers, you know, the client partners for whom you're trying to source and find these exceptional candidates. So when we talk about the interview, which is very unique space, and I'm yet to see anybody be consistently really good at that. People think they're good at that, but in reality, it's a difficult space. It's a combination of art and the science, and it's a muscle that you have to continuously train. And if you don't interview on a continuous basis, you lose that. So from your perspective, as you prepare both sides for that very first interview, the candidate and the hiring manager, setting those right expectations, tell us a little bit more about the process that you go through. What something that consistently really helps you improve or increase your batting average?
Yep. Well, if we're talking about the candidate side of that, even if you're talking to a senior candidate or a consultant who's been around, has done this before, you don't want to sound like you're pandering, like, hey, listen, I'm sure you know how to interview. This is not your first rodeo. But if you're willing to spend an extra 5 or 10 minutes with me, it's just going to help you better understand what it is you're playing for here. And people always appreciate that. But even the basics, people forget over time, just like you mentioned. You know, it's making sure you're answering the question, but not too much. You know, answer it if it's something you don't know. Be honest. We'll appreciate that. Maybe you can equate it to something similar you've done before. The worst thing you can do is just sort of, if you don't know the answer to something, maybe it's a technology or something you're not that familiar with, don't pretend you do, and people can see through that, you know? And I think honesty and transparency is goes a long way on both sides of that. From the client side, that's a little more interesting too. I find that very often, or often anyway, a lot of hiring managers that are doing these interviews are people that were, you know, when they started off, they were maybe coders, or maybe they were network infrastructure people that were really good. And so they get promoted to be a manager, but no one ever helped them understand, how do I interview? You know, and frankly, a lot of them could be introverted personalities, aren't even used to that sort of interaction. So we try to help them with that, but you have to do it in such a way that you're not, pandering or telling them this is what you have to do. You might suggest, hey, here's what I do when I interview people. You might find this helpful. And they'll take it or they'll leave it. But I think if you take a few extra minutes and say, look, we're not going to bust through this as fast as maybe some of the other agencies you've worked with before, but there's a value proposition to that, and here's why. And if you're willing to spend 5 minutes, let me help you understand how we see the best success in client consultant interviews. And people like that, you know, mm-hmm. People like those kinds of suggestions.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's very unique perspective, especially from both sides. Because at the end of the day, you know, as a hiring manager, creating that environment or an opportunity of a two-way street conversation to provide your candidate with an opportunity also to ask all the questions that they want to make the assessment on their side. If you're the right leader, if this is the right environment for them to thrive in, I think that's, you know, one of the ingredients of successful interview.
It's a great point, John, because I tell everybody, look, this is a two-way street. You are interviewing the client as much as they are interviewing you.
Yep.
So that kind of takes some of the pressure off. And we tell them too, it's like, look, if everything seems like a good match on paper, technology-wise, this is an industry you're interested in. But I, you know, whether or not you hit it off with the person you're interviewing with over the phone, we don't know until you get there. So we're not the kind of company that's going to try to pressure you into taking an offer you don't want to take. If you call me back after the interview and, hey, this isn't for you, I'd like to understand why, because we all learn from these things. But you know, that's your decision to make. We'll help you find something different if this wasn't the right thing. And people appreciate that because it takes the pressure off being a, quote, salesperson. People feel uncomfortable with that word.
Yeah. So
we're more of a consultant for them, really.
Right. You're not treating that as just another transaction. So I think that's, you know, I've been there in those shoes. I've been on the, you know, when I was part of the corporate sector, I, you know, I've dealt with plenty of staffing companies myself. I've been a consultant. So I think there's always a little bit of both. So that's very, you know, exciting to see that a lot more companies are approaching that more from that relationship approach versus a transaction. So that's very interesting. The future of work has been on a tremendous rise, you know, especially in the last couple of years. It's a trend that I'm very interested in terms of contingent workforce perspective, how people will collaborate, how people will communicate, and just overall how they will work in the future. What are your thoughts on that? What have you seen and that will, you know, from your perspective, will shape actually how people collaborate in the future? Just share some thoughts from that perspective.
Sure. Well, technology is booming right now, maybe in a way I've never seen before. It's amazing. But, you know, we were forced into this remote work environment over the past 15 months, like it or not, you know, because some companies kind of resisted it. It wasn't a big mainstream thing yet. And had this pandemic happened, you know, 10 years prior, I can't imagine what would have happened because the technology wasn't quite in place back then for things like Zoom and Microsoft Teams and Skype and these other applications these days that make video conferencing and collaboration so easy. I mean, it's the next best thing to sitting in the same room. You can share screens, you can have multiple people. Obviously, it's really come a long way and people have seen through this like, hey, this can really work. So, you know, now you've got, you know, the need to keep that technology robust and growing, which is all IT, of course. And now you can be anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, and collaborate with teams without having to get on an airplane and spend all that time, hotels and travel and all of that stuff. But I think production has increased a lot. And I think this is only the very beginning of what we're going to see moving forward. So I think if you're in IT, whether you're in IT staffing or an IT company, this is the field. I mean, it was before, but this is really it now. So we're excited by all of that.
Right, absolutely. I think that's, you know, we'll see a lot of that play out, especially in the next, you know, year or so, just overall how companies, you know, approach the overall kind of the coming out of pandemic almost to say when they bring or decide to keep the hybrid models and things like that. I think it's, I'm excited to see what's going to play out.
It's so interesting because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of available office space, at least here in Orlando, like never before. People are trying to sublease because everyone's, they decided they like working from home. You know, in our case, we haven't, we're doing a hybrid right now. We're in the office 3 days a week and we're enjoying our 2 days remote, Mondays and Fridays. And I think that's working for us. Now we'll tweak that if we need to, but in particular to what my business does, being in the office and collaborating real time, sitting there as opposed to waiting for an email back from someone sometimes is really key. So, you know, that it might differ depending on what business you're in, but for a sales environment, a staffing environment, we're able to really enjoy both worlds at this point, which I think is great.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. The kind of the latter segment of each episode, I love to focus on the guest speaker's content diet. What are some of the sources that you consume on daily basis that lets you stay ahead of the curve, keep yourself informed of all the things that are happening in your industry? Share some of those sources with us.
Yeah. Well, first, I love this part of it. I need to do more, and I look forward to doing more. You know, we're part of the staffing industry analysts group. They put out a lot of relevant information, particularly for obviously for our business. But even just reading, I'm a big reader. I love to absorb information, anything from the Wall Street Journal, The Economist, Forbes, all of the. And luckily, these days, you know, you read one article and you get, you know, 15 of them pushed in front of you over some form of social media every day. So I think it's important to expose yourself to a lot of different sides and a lot of different angles of this, because that's where ideas come from. See what other people are doing, what's working for them, what specifically isn't working for them. But reading every day, relevant articles, current events, just news is the biggest learning vehicle I have these days. And I find it's critical for me to help make decisions about where we're going, who we want to be, everything from finances to culture, you know, all of those things combined. So
yeah,
I do a lot of that.
That's awesome. Yeah, with so much information overload and availability, it's always interesting to me to see how selective people are when it comes to what you let your mind be exposed to. In terms of books, what are you currently reading, and is there a book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Yeah, well, I first of all, I love reading history more so than just general business books, because history is really shows you, it's more exciting to me anyway, how people, what real people went through at the time, how they made decisions, what their thought process were, how they overcame enormous adversity. Those are always inspiring stories. I read a lot about U.S. presidents and through history, how they made decisions, what challenges they faced, because you can always find something to equate on a much smaller scale to your own life. And you can reflect on those on those ideas and those principles and incorporate them into what you do. What am I reading now is sort of a little different. I almost laugh when you ask that. I'm reading a book about the state of rock and roll music in the year 1971. Just because I'm a big music buff, and that's just sort of a little bit of escapism, but it is still history. So that's kind of what I'm reading today, just for fun.
That's awesome. Love these recommendations. Roger, last but not least, for anyone who is looking to start their own IT staffing company or any type of, you know, recruiting or staffing company, not specifically in IT, What advice would you give to that entrepreneur, something that you wish you knew when you were first starting out, or as you gained that experience throughout the last 10 years? What would be some of those recommendations?
Well, it's don't rush it. I see you know, everyone seems to want to, especially if you're hit like in your point in your career in this business. I network with a lot of these people, and everybody wants to start their own business or thinks they can start their own business. Some do, but so many more just try and don't or never get around to it. You know, my advice early on anyway in the process is don't overextend yourself. Don't spend more money than you're taking in, just like you're managing your own personal bank account. We're debt free because we took it really slow. We don't take loans from anybody. We have a line of credit, but we haven't need to use it. And that's sort of the overnight success thing. It's not so overnight. We started off talking about is we're just doing this organically, and we grow at a managed pace. We look at the numbers a lot, and if we can afford to hire more people, we do. If we make decisions over are we really using this tool or this software, you know, whatever the case may be. If it's something we don't need, we're probably not going to get it. But if it's something that can help us grow, we'll invest in that. But I would say just do it at a very managed pace and get help. Don't think you know everything or try to figure this all out on your own. No matter how senior you are, nobody knows everything. That is for sure. So listen to different perspectives, seek out mentors, get their advice. If you find it worthy, take it. Maybe you don't, but at least it'll give you something else to think about that maybe you hadn't before.
That's awesome. I love these recommendations, Roger. And thanks so much for your time today. Very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. So I definitely appreciate how generous you were with your information today.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, John. It was my pleasure. Believe me.
thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.